and welcome to Untold, the podcast where we go behind the scenes and uncover the untold stories of food and drink businesses. I'm Harry, founder of The Savourist.
I'm Mariana, founder of Hullabaloo. We want to uncover some of the stories from founders and business leaders that wouldn't normally be told. Everyone talks about the positives, the new launches, the NPD.
We want to hear about the not-so-great things, the nitty-gritty and the emotional toll this can have on mental health. Over the next few months, we're going to be talking to founders and business owners about their untold stories.
Everyone goes through these challenging moments. It's a fact of life. It's time to talk about them and encourage others to do the same.
Hello and welcome to Untold, the podcast where we go behind the scenes to discover the reality in building a business. Today we have a super, super exciting guest, Mr. Andrew Allen. He's currently commercial director and partner at Biff's Kitchen. He's got numerous advisory and non-executive director roles within the industry, including Ollie's Olives, Willy Croft, and Ogg's Alternative Foods. Andrew, it's fantastic to have you on. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, and well done for nailing the intro on the first take. It really was the first take as well.
So. I went very formal and called you Andrew, though.
You know what? It's fine. I am Andrew Allen, and Andy Allen does sound like a local radio DJ. So fine if we were doing late night love.
But. Love it. Let's go back and do it again.
Come on, you're a podcaster, so you know that's not too far from our radio. Welcome, Andy. Yeah. To kick off, could you just introduce yourself and your career briefly?
Well, briefly for the career is it's complicated, but we'll give it a go. So my background is I did a design degree, actually, engineering design. No inkling at the time that I was startups were what I thought I was going to do. But at the same time, actually thinking back at university, I promoted club nights, and you'll be surprised how many other founders I meet that did that while they were at uni. They either put events on or they were part of that kind of scene. Left uni and I got approached on one of my last couple of days, got a phone call from that was basically a startup that was focusing on selling mobile phones to students, and it was an MVNO, so a bit like Virgin Mobile type thing for aimed at students. So effectively ended up getting offered a job, and so straight at uni I was straight into a startup environment. At the time, again, you don't perhaps realize how valuable that's going to be. What it felt like was it was not working, and it was a pain in the backside. But now I thought I learned so much. What really was a great example of how you can burn through a lot of cash but still not have enough. Done for about 18 months and then folded. But by that point I'd gone, but I'd had an experience of 3 or 4 months. That was interesting. Then went into the design world and advertising, and pretty much just got my head down in that space. Again, it was an independent brand. Then I went to work. That was in Birmingham. Then I got the opportunity to come down to London, and I joined a startup that was focused on helping brands understand digital. Showing my age now, it was some way ago. As brands were starting to think about what social media was, starting to kind of Web 2.0, which is definitely showing my age. And so we help train people, we help run pitches, we help brands find good agencies to work with, and we're effectively an intermediary. And again, I didn't really consider the fact that I was watching a startup grow firsthand, but it really were, and all the challenges that come with that. The reality was that business couldn't scale. It was very much consultancy led. And the reality was there was only one Sam, there was only one me, couldn't really turn it into a product. And eventually Sam, we founded, he got the opportunity to go and do it globally for one of the big brewers. And it was like, okay, it feels like it's a good point to go. I felt it was time to do something else. One of the agency groups that I'd met in the process of doing that offered, I'd always got on with the guys. I knew they were trying to buy a digital agency at the time, but they also didn't know exactly what they were doing. So we sat and had lunch and said, I know you're trying to buy one. You don't really know if it will be the right fit. Why don't we start one? And we agreed we did. So basically, this is sort of mid, late 20s. We ended up going into a joint venture, which was a lot of fun. And I did that. That digitally focused, so it's 3.5 odd years, almost 4 years. And again, it's a common theme. You perhaps don't realize how much you're learning from the startup world again, because part of the deal with that was I didn't have the means to not take some cash. Why it was a joint venture rather than a pure startup is I took a salary from day one, and not a market salary, but a decent salary. And it was funny. So there wasn't a point where I was ever set really stressing over cash flow. It was very much we were more of a vehicle rather than a pure standalone business. And over time, I was more interested in doing great work. And so we decided to, rather than have a bigger chunk of my own thing, merge it into the group, take up something in the group. That then made me realize over time it wasn't my baby, and that's what I really loved doing. And ultimately, I was going to go back to being an employee, which I didn't want to do. And we sat and had a very grown-up conversation, and I decided to leave. And you have to, and because of your options and my sort of leaving covenants and those things, in doing that, it meant that I walked away. And now, looking back, some people are like, well, you did a lot to walk away from it, but I learned a huge amount. I'm still really close with the guys that back me on that. Like I see them as friends and mentors, and it was the right thing to do. Like, options, realistically, you've got to be some kind of exit event for them really to be worthwhile. There still hasn't been one. It's difficult for them to move it on. I'd still be there. So decided to do that, which is, this is where we get towards moving over to food. I was doing a bit of consultancy, so I could day rate stuff. Some of it was advertising, some of it was brands. Got the chance to take on a passion project, which was Port Scratchings. And initially that was purely all about a bit of fun. It went from a bit of fun to effectively house on the line, because you put in personal guarantees on things in a pretty short period of time, 6-9 months. And because of this is an audio podcast, so these are the me moving my hands here completely doesn't help, but it kind of started off that I was doing 4.5 days a week on consultancy pieces and half a day on food bits, to quite quickly the food bit took over and you were turning down consultancy. It's like, oh, okay, I'm now in food now, not in advertising. And that is a podcast in its own right. We went to Dragon's Den, we had a real run at it. It ended up getting retail listings. And then I abruptly left. And I think, there's a whole podcast on that in its own right. I don't particularly need to go into that now. I don't particularly want to. It's water under a bridge, and those things don't really need to be stirred up. If you buy me a pint, we can talk about it one day. But the reality was, that's an interesting space. Like, you found something, you're not doing it, and it continues on. And then, so I found myself with what I wanted to do next. I'd also, having done meat products, I'm not vegan myself, but I'm your quintessential flexitarian. But you doing that, you become more aware of everything. Just over time, you see more things, you get more involved, you get exposed to more things. And I decided that the next thing I wanted to do was be plant-based. I just felt it was more of a progressive move. And so I moved to that, and which is over the last couple of years is where I've got to now. So I said, predominantly, I don't take a co-founder title, because Biff and Krista, who are a married couple, they founded Biff's. There is a Biff. And they've got the business going as a street food business. And I kind of effectively saw it was what was happening. We had a really good chat, and I could see there was a way of turning that into a product-focused business. So effectively I said, if you think that's interesting, I'll buy in. But I'm not going to claim I was there for the first year standing on for street food marketing. I wasn't, so I'm partner of that. And the three of us, we're with the exec team, effectively a founding team, but just but in working in a slightly different relationship. And then I said, I'm involved with non-exec and a few brands, whether that's Ollie's Olives. I'm more of an advisory piece with Oggs, but Hannah's got a great team there, and there's a few other brands as well. So that is not short. That is definitely the longest you'll have of all of these, but that, I think it's important to understand how we got there.
It's great. It's fascinating, and it's really interesting to see the beginning bit in terms of sort of setting up club nights and various different things, because I completely agree. I think you talk to majority of founders and they've always had an itch that they wanted to scratch from quite a young age. And I also think, so what I took from that as well is how interesting it is, your kind of entrance into the food industry. I think, again, a lot of founders and business leaders who come into the food industry with a startup don't necessarily go, I want to work in the food industry. They go, I've got a wicked product that I want to sell. And then before you know it, so 6 months later, you're like, oh, okay, I'm now in the food industry. I think it's a really interesting one, isn't it? There aren't many other industries.
I think it's dangerous, to be honest, as well. Like, yeah. I love it. I mean, that's one of the things I love about food, is that it's so passion-led, right?
Well, as you just touched on, the sort of hard work and not necessarily always getting to an end goal, I guess. You know, and hopefully our listeners by now know that we're here to talk about the tougher times and the things that aren't spoken about. Everybody talks about the glorified moments in business. So I guess on that note, I'd love to hear a moment in your career that sort of changed your thinking potentially of the industry, or a couple of bits that, that you really struggled to get through and what you did to kind of pull yourself out the other side.
Yeah, I mean, when we were first talking about this, there's two kind of areas I think I kind of want to cover, one that's a lot more recent and one that's a bit further away, but I think both are in super important. And you are right, these are the this way too much fluffy, everything is awesome type approach to all these things, when the reality is, it's not all awesome, right? I feel like, look back, most of the things I've been involved with, I'm fortunate, have been a success. But then when I replay them in the way we've just replayed them there, there's none of them where I've sailed off into the sunset, right? Like the advertising agency, founded the agency, had a great run, decided to leave. It's not like it sold an exit. The vast majority of us, you're not going to get the massive exit and go and be the next dragon, right? That's just not the reality. Yeah. So there's all the other things that need to come with it, and the sort of the stuff that makes sure that it's working for your life and all these things are so important. And it often gets lost. And when I'm doing my... got my advisory hat on, that's the stuff I try and push as much as possible, because if a miserable founder makes for a crap business, like ultimately it won't work. And I think so, two areas I said we touched on. I was co-founder, had been from the very first, like the very beginnings of Snuff and Pig, had written every word, very part of it, suddenly not doing that anymore. It's that leaving something you've done, I mean, ultimately the position I was in was financially, I was in a good place. That had worked out pretty well for me. But the financial thing isn't everything. In fact, it, in the grand scale of things, it's really nothing. When you look at it, it's great. It gives you a bit of freedom. But suddenly I was like, there's an identity piece to start with. You're sat there and you're like, oh, well, most people only know me because I lived it in my own personal Facebook and all those, and social bubble and all those kind of things. So that's all everyone knew me for. We've done the Dragon's Den thing, all that kind of stuff. When you suddenly find yourself not doing those things, it definitely leaves a bit of a hole. Yeah, when you find yourself, it leaves a hole. And I found myself in a position where, financially, I'm in a better position than I would have I'd ever been. And I didn't have to go and chase something down, but I also found that incredibly, I felt a bit lost. Oh, I felt very lost, actually. Yeah. And that's hard to get your head around. And I've talked to lots of people that have exited a business, whether that's the big, successful, amazing ride off into the sunset exit, or whether we had to put it like, I interviewed Lucy from Puttalicious once, and she ended up liquidating that business. And there's everywhere. Yeah, of course, there's obviously some connections there. There's everything in between there, but there's a common theme of like, it's an interesting place to suddenly find yourself. Like I know of a couple of people that got an exit, and I've sat and had lunch with them, and they've told me, and like, it's made them richer than they could ever imagine, and were genuinely miserable for a while when they left, because it's that lack of purpose and that peace. And you open up your email and it's like, I haven't really got, you've got to go and redo it. And I found that really quite tricky, and double with the fact that I'd done the business with one of my closer friends and all of those things, it was definitely difficult. I found myself beating myself up. I loved to go out on my bike and go for a ride, and yet I found like there was no reason for me to worry about 9 to 5, and yet I was still finding myself conditioned to, well, better go and sit in front of my laptop, and I'd feel guilty about going for a bike ride. I'm like, why am I feeling guilty to go out for a ride? There's no inclination for me to have to do these things. And I had to get my head around the fact that I was putting a lot of pressure on myself to find the next thing. And it doesn't work like that. If you try and force it, invariably it'll be wrong. I'm a great view that you need time to let things soak. You need time to explore stuff. And if you force them, I think you end up, like, you see that quite a lot with the tech stuff. People are like, we're going to do a startup. It never really gets anywhere because they're trying to force it. They're not passionate about it and it doesn't work. And that was certainly one of the things I found really hard for a while, and trying to get myself into a structure where I felt I was fulfilled in my day. I'm not the kind of person who will sit and watch TV all day. It drives me mad. And I found lockdown hard for that, because I'm just not comfortable. I find that the Christmas this year was a great example. It's just loads of, some people are like, I wasn't great doing nothing. I couldn't wait to get back and do things and move things forward. Which is, but that's how that's definitely how I ended up doing the non-exec side of things in the advisory piece more, is because initially most of those things started as I was just happy to have a coffee with anyone who wanted a chat. And then after time you realize, well, one, there was definitely a confidence piece. Like, you leave, your confidence gets knocked, right? There's no two ways about that. You start to question yourself. You wonder, said we're not going to go into the ins and outs of stuff, but you start, you can't help but question yourself. So I've got to build that back up. I'm also terrible at charging for my time. Absolutely dreadful for it. And so I felt a bit guilty about that. But then you have to start to realize you can offer some value to those things and how you can make those things move forward. And I also just, you know what, I reached out to people I knew had been through different scenarios of similar natures and had some really good chats and made some really good friends off the back of it. Actually, people I was just sit and have a chat and listen to their view and how they did stuff. And it took a lot of time. And I think it doesn't matter what way you end up not doing a startup, once you've been a founder of something, the bit at the other side for a while is really pretty weird, right? Because you'll see someone you haven't seen for ages. It's a bit like I imagine a bit like it, like if you get divorced, because you see someone you haven't seen for a while and it's like, oh, how's your wife? And like, don't talk about the wife, you know. It's like and it's that stuff. Plus I had the added fact of it was on TV, so it was still being played out. It's still all this stuff, and it was like, man, it's not me anymore. So that was really interesting, and I had to learn some new things. And I think it mentally, I certainly got a little bit into more meditation, a few techniques, and those kind of things. Certainly not in a very Zen way, but I definitely would just. I don't, and I'm not sitting here saying I do this now. I don't actually find exercise does that job for me, but certainly when the stress is really high, I figured I'd just embrace stuff and see what worked, and some of those things have really helped.
I completely agree. I think meditation is absolutely fantastic, and I think more needs to be done to. There's a certain stigma around meditation, and that kind of like not in a Zen way is exactly that stigma. And I think actually 10 minutes just in your own head or in an app, being able to kind of focus and build the confidence and guide you in a way where like, okay, cool, I've got this, is genius.
Just anything that just break the cycle of the voice in your head and like the conversation and that chatter piece, and just give yourself a bit of a break sometimes, because you can really spoil yourself up. And also what I found was, I just found what worked for me. So I said, I've always liked using exercise and that kind of thing, but it's become more and more of a fixture of what I do now. Like I get antsy if I don't have a run or jump on a bike or do those kind of things. But to me, that is what helps. And I often find that actually it clears my head, and I'll get to the end of something and the solution will just present itself. And which sounds a bit deep and stupid, but I definitely think there's a lot in that. You can sit there and not see the wood for the trees forever. Yeah. And then you go off and do something else.
100%.
And also just on that, there's certainly while we're on here talking to you and any of our guests, there is no such thing as deep and stupid. The deeper, the stupider, the better. We love it all.
And me feeling that I need to do that is exactly the problem. I would say I'm pretty open to all and sundry. But you still, sometimes it still feels like there's a rationale that you need to qualify something, and it's not the case at all, is it? But it definitely, that process and that year afterwards from leaving, and from the financial point of view and getting my head together, and like also just kind of, there's a bit of a reinvention and really taking that time, as it was some of the toughest times certainly I've ever had, but also I think it has left me better equipped going forwards, because I learned things what would work. I learned that I need to share. I feel like I need to do that in certain ways. I need to do that. I need to have a group that I'm close with that I can talk to, and learn to value other people's opinions. And I also learned to value the flip side, is that after a while, no one really cares what's going on in your side to a point. Like, you can create the narrative is your narrative to make after a while. You it's too easy to get so hung up that everyone's thinking about all the details. It's not the case at all. So and that certainly helped. And then fast forward to last year, and this is much closer and much more emotionally led, is that my dad got it went from not being fine to being critically ill in a case of a week, and I'm very close to my dad in February. And that was just as, so we were ahead of the, it wasn't COVID, it may as well have been COVID. It was effectively, it was pneumonia based.
Yeah.
And lockdown kicked in whilst we were kind of ahead of the curve. He was actually one of the first people to be fully isolated because they changed some of the guidance. And because he'd been to the Canary Isles like 6 weeks previous, they were like, well, we've got to, so he had to be fully like separated and bubbled when that wasn't a thing and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And so we're going through that. And my dad eventually died sort of 3 months later, and it was dreadful because of all the lockdown and everything else. But I felt better equipped to deal with that stuff because of what had happened before. And I kind of knew, in that kind of crisis mode, I kind of felt I knew what I needed to do to get through it. I knew where I'd be strong and where I wouldn't be strong and what would help.
Yeah.
And I think in general that particularly for founders, but I think anyone working in a smaller business, like that kind of stuff and things that are going on in personal life, whether it's grief or all the things that are difficult, well, we're all going to, sadly, it's just part of life, right? We're all going to come across these things. Yeah. And quite often there's this kind of thing, well, you know, work-life balance, keeping those things separate. I don't think that's possible when you're in the kind of business, in the kind of situations that we are, like,
yeah.
Biff's is a small business, right? I lead on sort of the commercial side of things, and in sort of some of the conversations we're having, me just disappearing off the face of the planet for a while is only going to hurt that. And actually mentally that would make me feel worse anyway. Like,
yeah,
I would want to feel that I'm doing that side of things.
Yeah.
And it was really, I mean, at Luna, everyone who's a parent knows it's incredibly hard. It was further doubled by the fact of lockdown piece as well. So there was a point, and I can kind of joke about it because to me, this is what's helped. But
yeah.
Like we had, Biff was on a certain level of momentum, and that momentum is the thing that got hurt from lockdown and for like lots of businesses. But we were rolling out delivery left, right and center. We had big on food service, and suddenly all that stops. Furlough doesn't exist at this point. Everything is totally up in the air. And as I said, there aren't very many times in life you're going to find the business that you're effectively a founder of and a parent are both on life support at the same time. And that is pretty heavy. But at the same time, I don't know, because all that I've become a bit more open to understanding and building kind of a sort of a toolkit internally of how to deal with things and know to be able to open up to Lucy, my wife, or know to that some stuff I'm going to be all right with, and all those kind of things. I did feel like, even at the really shittiest things, and I was incredibly close to my dad, like we had season tickets to the football, I'd speak to him pretty much every day. Ultimately, I kind of felt like I knew there was a way to navigate through that. And I guess that's what I was very thankful for, because having like learned those things in the past. And I think that bringing it back to why this really matters to founders kind of piece and how different people react. I don't think for a second anyone would have looked bad on it if I had just disappeared and decided not to do stuff. But that's not how I'm geared. And to be honest, that's not how my dad was geared either. So we had the last meeting I had in central London. So I was pre like not being able to do that. A full face-to-face was with Sainsbury's, and we were working on, this was the start of talking Biff's about talking retail. And that meeting was obviously in London. I was in Birmingham. So I came down on the train from Birmingham, where my dad was at hospital, got down to London, got a phone call to say they moved him onto a ventilator, which is not good. So I was like, well, I'm going to go and do this meeting. Sat down to have a coffee and get my head together before I went to do the presentation. And someone nicked my wallet. It's like half an hour before I'm due to go in, I look down at my phone and I'm getting all these notifications on my phone for all these purchases that I haven't made.
Oh, no.
And they're all under contactless, and someone had dipped my pocket if there's a Pret opposite the Sainsbury's head office, which would have been, it's on Lever Lane. Yeah. Sat there, someone had dipped my pocket. And so I turn up to this meeting with like flustered, as you can imagine, like I'm on the phone still, like on the phone to the cards, trying to stop the cards, trying to say hello to this, to somebody. Like I was meeting, thankfully it was meeting Milena as well, who I knew and had the relationship with. So I could just, she kind of knew what was going on, but still I'm there. Plus, and it's just like, take a breath and then go and do the meeting kind of stuff. And in that kind of nutshell is kind of explains all the things you have, you are juggling as when you're doing startup. And I don't think you can hide from them. I was completely brutally honest with all of them about what was going on. I said, some people perhaps would have said, keep them to yourselves. I was like, no, this is what's going on, but I wanted to come and do this. Here we go. And so we did that. And then I went back to getting on with it. But those kind of things are really tricky. And I think you'd be naive to ever think you could keep it totally separate as a founder.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I completely agree. And I also think there's a piece there in terms of being open and honest with the buying team in terms of ultimately we are people and we are human and people.
Yeah.
Every single person you meet has issues at some point in their life. And as you said, everyone's going to go through it. It's just on different timelines, and actually opening up and be able to have that relationship. I guarantee you are now closer with the buyers at Sainsbury's, and the relationship benefited from that moment of being honest and being able to be like, look, this is what's happening, but I still need to keep going.
And I think, yeah. I think one of the good things that actually came out of 2020, if there is something, is probably this better work-life balance and this sort of more likelihood that you'll see people as a whole human being. Because everybody, you know, had children at home or whatever, and you kind of, everybody was juggling with their own things. And I think that there's more of an acceptance to that now. And I hope that something will kind of carry forward is like more empathy towards people as they are. I mean, on a level of keeping it professional, but.
And as I said, when we're doing if I'm doing it, sort of get the advisory hat on, or even if it's non-exec stuff, like one of my personal passions and views is just to check in at a founder level on if it's working for them personally, because those things really, like, it I don't think it's as bad in F&B actually, and I think it's improving in tech, but there is certainly certain, like, if you with tech as well, because you're more likely gonna create your MVP, probably get a VC backings, and it's like it might be a significant amount of money, and it's going to be strap yourself in kind of stuff. And there is a view of the founder needs to basically just be doing it for an absolute pittance, to be like breaking themselves, working all hours, replying to stuff all the time and all those things. I personally think that's bullshit. Some people, if that's part of their investment mantra, that's absolutely fine, but that wouldn't be who I'd want to work with. If you push people that hard, I think they make mistakes and the pressures are wrong, and they fear making, as soon as you ultimately fear making the wrong decision, you probably aren't going to be as brave, in my view. You've got to be able to have that stuff. So if it's a case of whether it's a salary piece or if it's just checking in and saying that, from a life plan point of view, what do you want to do? What's on, because the business needs to work for you as well. And if it's not, then because it's a fast track to being truly miserable, right? I think lots of people, well, hopefully not lots, but certainly there are some people that get to a point where they feel slightly trapped by what they've created, which is a real shame, because they should be incredibly proud of what they've created. It could still be, you can get to a business that's turned over £1 million, you should be a million prime plus brand, right? You should be incredibly proud of what you've done, because not many people get there. It's very hard to get something off the ground. It's very hard to say, I'm actually going to do it in the first place and actually do it. It's very hard to grow. It's very hard to get listings. So they should be super proud. But at the same time, if that's all it's going to be, and say all in inverted commas, it might just be that it's actually just a great big headache. And it's not actually, because everyone would love to make 10% EBITDA and actually be able to get themselves a nice dividend, all those things. Reality is they're not doing that at all. They're scraping by trying to raise, they're probably under capitalized all the time. They're actually finding that they're taking no money, and they're seeing, it might seem quite glamorous, but they're seeing their peers just accelerate off in other ways.
Yeah,
that's not great. And I think with the more, that's why I think it's so important to be really brutally honest with yourself early doors, what you want it to be, where you expect it to grow. Because I talk sometimes about just that, that checking in against kind of your your ambition versus the real reality of what's possible. I think we see like there are still plenty of people out there trying to do that still think that a protein ball is going to be like, they're going to, oh, we'll do protein balls because that's a big market. Yeah, but there's a reason why it's a big market already.
Yeah.
If you wanted to try and do that now, you'd have to raise so much money, be so aggressive. How are you pulling all those things together? And it's that kind of stuff that I think is really important, because if you can't do that, it's a fast track to a real difficult spot.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I also think there's a really interesting piece there around sort of goalposts changing and moving as well, and actually having that check-in time with yourself, or having someone like yourself in an advisory role to make sure that the founder is checking in on themselves is so key. Because as you say, you get to £1 million and you're like, okay, great, well, what now? I want £2 million, I want £3 million, or I want, you get a Sainsbury's listing and you want a Tesco's listing and you want a Waitrose listing. And actually the goalposts change quite a lot. I think something that I don't do very well, and that I'm sort of trying to push the team to do at the moment, is celebrate the little wins and actually go, okay, we are now, actually let's take some time out, and in COVID it's quite difficult, but let's go get some people and have a beer. And I don't mean sort of flashy wins, but just really take it in and go, okay, mentally I am appreciating what I have just done. And I've now got the kind of appreciated it, so I can now move on to the next stage, rather than just constantly being like, what's next, what's next, what's next, what's next, what's next?
And I'm terrible for that, absolutely. And I think a lot like and also particularly, I found it easier because when I did Snap and Pig, marketing was what I did effectively. That was all I really lent on. And so particularly in that, from a creative point of view, generally when it's ever anything creative, by the time it's live in the real world, you've already found something you don't like and it's dead to you. Nature of creative, the creative mindset, right? Is that it doesn't matter what it is, by the time it's out there and everyone's enjoying it, I always think, like, if you're an actor in a film or a producer of a film, by the time that film is live, you must hate it, right? You've got to go and then you've got to go and sit with everybody going, isn't that great? And you're like, hate this bit, or I hate so I very rarely did I enjoy much of it. Like, since it was on Dragon's Den, hated every minute of that being on TV. Like, had no problem doing it, absolutely no, but in fact I really enjoyed the process and the bits that come out of it. I've only watched it twice. One of those times is when it was live and I was kind of sat behind my laptop, couldn't watch it, and then my wife made me watch it back again just to But I didn't enjoy that bit. It was like, no, that's gone, let's move on. And I found it easier the last couple of years of just, even if it's just personally internally, where if you were just checking in at the end of the week kind of thing, I find that better actually nowadays, is that I still will have a sit down sometimes on a Monday or a Tuesday, and you just have one of those days where if it's flat, right? You just sit there and it's just like, not at the races for one reason or another. Mentally you're not at it, you don't feel motivated. And the old me not that long ago would definitely sit there and just beat yourself up repeatedly, and it's a spiral, right? You're going like, I'm doing this isn't very good, but then I don't feel great, and then, but instead of just accepting it, going for a walk and coming back to it or whatever, or just dropping it for the afternoon, instead you just beat yourself up and you spiral off. Whereas now, Even I think particularly because of in startup, it's just such a roller coaster, right? You can be having a dreadful morning and an amazing afternoon from a couple of emails, and vice versa.
Yeah.
But you just gotta just check in week to week or once, and that's why things like OKRs are great from a planning point of view. You're just setting those big goals and going, okay, this is what we're working towards, and then checking in every week or every couple of weeks and going, okay, we've achieved this, and then you have a little celebration, right? Because you can feel that contentment of doing those things. Yeah. And you're absolutely right. Like, celebrating those little things are so important, because there's something in that kind of entrepreneurial and founder mindset of like, well, what's next, what's next, what's next, what's next? And that's what allows us to do it in the first place.
Yeah,
absolutely. But what just hurts it immediately, like it just stops you enjoying it. And I think to create a culture like that is incredibly valuable to everybody.
I completely agree. Great. Andy, thank you so much for coming on Untold. I think you've been incredibly brave and I've certainly gained a lot listening, and it's incredibly inspirational. And I guess last little bit, love to hear a little bit more about Biffs and kind of what the future holds, really. Where can people find you?
I suppose I should talk about briefly about the business I'm involved in now. So Biffs, it's been a really interesting journey for us all anyway. So like Biff myself and him were friends of friends before we started working together. So it's been interesting kind of building all those dynamics and all those things and putting those things into play and making sure how that works from a remote point of view has been part of our challenge in the last year. And it's been good. It's enjoyable. I think it's been super open with each of us. Great. The business is all around the more indulgent. We use the word junk, but in style, not in substance, for the plant-based space and vegan space. As I said, we were very much focused on, and we still are at the moment, on hospitality and food service. So we have our own operations, and we are the biggest plant-based brand in delivery. So in terms of that, the pure play delivery brands, we're the biggest in Europe at the moment, which sounds potentially bigger than it is, but it's still celebrate those little wins.
That's it. We're not making that up.
We'll have a woo.
And this is the plug time, man. So dial up the good news.
Which is great, which is lovely. So, and that's growing. A lot of that's at the moment in partnership with BrewDog. A lot of BrewDog sites are closed because of new lockdown and not being able to sell beer. The takeaway piece, which that hurt lots of people in ways that you perhaps wouldn't expect. So that's fun and games, but that's going well. The food service piece is still growing. There's still lots of calls. I think the optimism's there now. I think people can see that, like, there is a way out now. And so there's talks. Yeah. And then hopefully retail is coming. So retail is what we've been all the way back to that meeting back in September, back in February with JS. Like, lots happened during lockdown that meant there was momentum that changed, a couple of the manufacturers you're talking to couldn't work with us, so that's all coming back now. So watch this space.
Fantastic. Well, I could sit here and talk to you for hours, and I'm sure we will over a pint at some point. Well, thank you so much for coming on Untold, and really, really, really fantastic chat, and we look forward to speaking to you soon.